want to make sure that we have time to talk through today's topic of three-dimensional generosity, because let's be honest, if you listen to Eric talk for an hour on generosity and then you want to come and hear more about generosity, I mean, you guys are the A-team of givers in this room. So I just want to applaud your effort to come and hear more. And so, you know, Eric does we all work for Ronald Blue Trust. So myself, Mark Farrell, Eric, and so we get to talk about generosity all the time. And he did a wonderful job, I think, of sharing about the heart of giving and really the call to give from the Lord. And what we'll do today is talk a little bit more about how do you put that into practice? What are some of the practical ways that you can apply that both in your family and in your business? So let me start by introducing myself. My name is Clint Park, and this is Mark Farrell. Mark and I will pass the mics back and forth. I'll focus more on the business side. And I do that because I work in our business consulting practice. And so our job within Ronald Blue Trust is to work with our clients who own businesses and help them steward what is quite often the largest asset on their balance sheet. We do that through things like business succession planning. We do M&A advisory work for them. We do corporate health consulting, business generosity planning, and corporate governance. We facilitate and structure corporate governance programs. And then Mark works in our private wealth division, and he does a lot of what Eric was talking about today with individuals. He helps people understand what their financial finish line is, and it's, you know, he talked about we don't want to create financial independence, because that's when we start putting our hope in our wealth and not in our Heavenly Father. We want to create financial freedom. Freedom to follow the Lord wherever he's directing us. And so that's what Mark does, is he helps people figure out what their financial finish line is, or put it another way, is figure out how much is enough, and then he challenges them to give the rest of it away. And so today we're going to be talking about three-dimensional generosity. The goal that that FCCI gave us when we started talking about this back in probably February was really twofold. They wanted, one, since the theme is it's transformational, they wanted us to provide some transformational ideas around giving. And so, you know, our hope is to transform the way that you think about giving and think more about generosity. And so that's goal number one. The second is, for those of you who really wanted to have a one-on-one conversation or dialogue around how do you put these principles into practice in your life, they wanted us to provide an opportunity for you to do that with a member of the Ron Blue team, whether that's here in Fort Lauderdale, or when you get back home. We have 13 offices around the country and work with clients in all 50 states. And so they wanted us to provide an opportunity to have a one-on-one conversation. So throughout our time today, we're going to share with you a lot of the practical things that we help our clients do. But then we'll also share some of the tools and some of the wisdom that we offer. And so if any of that resonates with you and you want to learn more, there's a sign-up sheet over there, or our contact information will be at the end of the presentation, and we invite you to reach out to us. Real quickly, you have in your seat a book called Faces of Generosity. This is a book that we published that talks about, it's 27 different stories of our clients around the country that are living a life of generosity, that in you know, both not just in the way that they handle their money, but in how they spend their time, how they invest in their relationships, how they impact, you know, God's kingdom around the world. And so please accept it as our gift to you. We'd love for you to take it just as an encouraging way to think through, one, to celebrate the way that the Lord is working in people's hearts, but also to challenge and encourage you to integrate generosity in a greater way into your life. So without any further ado, I'll go ahead and get started. I love this statement. You know, in Luke 12, Jesus shared the idea, to whom much is given, much is expected. Now, just like Eric talked about today with the 1 Timothy verse, there's a lot of ambiguity here. I mean, I don't know about you, but I look at this and I says, well, okay, how do I know if I've been given much? And then if I have been given much, how do I know how much is expected? And so while I don't pretend to know the mind of Christ, I will share with you from our experience some people that we know, that we get the privilege of working with, and define who's been given much, and then hopefully provide some ideas on how you can make the most of whatever you have been given. And those people that I mentioned that I think have been given much would be business owners in the United States. I mean, if you just, I did a Google search, what's the average salary of a small business owner in the U.S., and it's $68,000 a year. Now, within our country, that amounts to about 37%, or one of the top 37% earners in our country, which is good, but it doesn't really doesn't sound all that impressive. But when you look at it in the framework of the entire world, $68,000 a year is in the top 0.14% of wage earners in the entire world. So if we start to look at things from God's perspective and not our perspective, not looking at those around us and saying, they're rich, I'm not, but we look at it from God's perspective and says, what has he given us? Then we quickly realize that as business owners, we have been given much. In fact, I'd go so far as to say that Christian business owners could be compared to the servant who received five talents in the parable of the talents in Matthew 25. Now, as we go along a little bit further, I'll share with you what I think those five talents are. But think about that parable. Right at the end of the parable, as the master is meeting with the servant and saying, you know, what have you done? And he says, look, here's the 10 talents that I brought you. I mean, what's that phrase that he says? He says, well done, good and faithful servant. I mean, who doesn't want to hear those words when they stand in front of their Heavenly Father? I mean, those words of affirmation to me are what motivate me to do what I do each and every day. And so, you know, two things that we at Ronald Blue Trust do to help our clients hear those words. One is we help them understand that God owns it all. You've heard that multiple times this week. And so we're not going to spend too much time talking about that. Instead, what we're going to do is focus on the second thing that we do for our clients, which is helping them maximize their stewardship opportunities. And today, you know, three-dimensional generosity is a way that we feel you can maximize the stewardship opportunities that God has given you. I mean, if you think about three dimensions, right? One dimension is just length, right? It's just a line. Two dimension becomes a square, right? Now it's got width and length. But three dimension is a cube, and now it's got height, width, and depth. It's so much richer. It's so much more dynamic. It's so much more comprehensive. And that's what we want to try to encourage you to think beyond just simple giving to actually living a generous life.
So we're going to talk about this concept of three-dimensional giving in the framework of going through each one of the dimensions, and then we'll have a personal application points, and we'll also have business application points as well. So when we talk about the first dimension of generosity, we're talking about being generous with financial capital. That is the money and the financial assets that God's blessed you with, and how do we give those to kingdom purposes? Many of us have grown up, and Eric alluded to this before, but grown up with the concept of giving as a percentage of our income. And that's, if God's called you to do that, that's wonderful. But we've run into situations where individuals have been maybe blessed materially in a given year, even though they have a low income. They may have a low taxable income, but they may have assets that have grown in value, a stock portfolio, a piece of investment real estate, or maybe even your company. And so when you look at it, and it's especially true for someone who's retired, right? Maybe they're no longer earning income anymore, but their assets are increasing year over year. And so we talk through this concept of giving a portion of your increase. That is, perhaps you can look at your net worth at the beginning of the year, look at it at the end of the year, and say, can I give a portion of this? Now, this generates some challenges, because if you go through, say it's a piece of investment real estate that's appreciated in a given year, and you sell that piece of real estate, and then you give the funds to ministry, you're probably going to be faced with a capital gain. So there's ways to go about doing this to actually give the asset away rather than giving or selling it, getting the capital gain, and then giving the cash. Not only gives you avoids the capital gain, it allows you to give the same amount to the ministry, and you get the tax deduction. So that's one way to think about transforming your thinking on giving financial assets. As it relates to the business, business owners are used to giving a portion of their profit each year. But the transformed view of looking at this is prioritizing the ongoing health of your business so that you can give year after year. In order to do that, you have to make sure that it's a sustainable entity moving forward. And we work with clients in a number of different ways to make sure that their businesses are sustainable. We have a business health assessment, and there's a copy over here if you'd like to go through that exercise. But we touch on different areas: legacy, wisdom, leadership, stewardship. Legacy, simply, God has a purpose for your business. He's given you that business for a reason, and are we maximizing those opportunities? Wisdom. Many times business owners are the person that started the business and they've made the decisions all along the way themselves, but are we getting outside counsel? Maybe that's through our FCCI group. Maybe that's through a professional advisor, an accountant, a wealth advisor like myself, or an attorney. Maybe a team of those folks that can provide insight and help you see things that you're not seeing. Leadership, there's a big movement out there to recruit leaders, right? To find leaders to come in and run your business. What we've found to be beneficial is actually growing those leaders from the ground up. Investing into their lives, they get the culture of your company, and they're potentially able to lead the company much more effectively. And then lastly, stewardship. Are we stewarding all the aspects of the business, from the inventory to the office supplies? Are we being a good steward? Because this is God's business, and we want to make sure that we're being a steward of that. In sum, if we want the business to continue to provide financial capital, giving to the various ministries and causes that God's directed us to give to, we have to put our own interests below that of the business itself. The business has to run it there. And I'll give you a quick example of a case where I've seen this run into problems with this. Had a client that we referred into, a third-generation business, so not many businesses get there. It's a very successful business, and there were some family members that were working in the business, some that were not working in the business. And those that were not working in the business saw the business as a means to accomplish their own personal agenda. There was no distribution policy in place for the business itself. Someone would take money out to go on a vacation, and then someone else would say, hey, you did that, so I'm going to go put my kids in private school. It's kind of a tit-for-tat mindset. And as you can imagine, that created an enormous amount of family tension. For those that worked within the business itself, they're frustrated because they don't have the capital necessary to help the business run in the way that it should. And the president, who was the son-in-law, was on the verge of leaving the company. Now, if he had left that company, the impact that business was having in the local community through the ministries that it was supporting, and then even also the ability that the owners that didn't work in the business to provide for their lifestyle would have been compromised and would have gone away. So we want to make sure that we are looking at a sustainable way and building in processes within the business to make sure that it's sustainable over the long run. We're going to move on to the second dimension of generosity. And this is defined as being generous with financial and social capital. And a quick definition of social capital is just that which gives you the tactics to be able to make it through this life here on earth. And I'll start this off with a riddle. And see if you can answer this here. It says, all things it devours, birds, beasts, trees, flowers, gnaws iron, bites steel, grinds hard, stones to meal, slays king, ruins towns, and beats high mountain down. Any guesses as to what that might be? Time. You a J.R. Tolkien fan? That came from The Hobbit. It's also how Joshua McDowell spelled love, how children spell love, T-I-M-E. Time, I think, is one of our biggest opportunities for stewardship. Used for good, it can accomplish much. If we waste it, it leads to regret. As business owners and families of business owners, I've found that, and really all of us, we have an enormous number of things pulling at our time. And sometimes, if we're honest, it's easier to write a check to a ministry than it is for us to give 3 to 4 hours of our time investing in that ministry. However, I'd ask, what is it that we're doing with those 3 to 4 hours? Are we investing them effectively? That may be good, but if we're not investing those for the right purpose, that can lead to waste and lead to regret. I was in a training recently, and the person made the observation that we tend to approach situations with the view that money is finite and time is infinite, right? But that's in fact quite opposite of the case. Money is theoretically infinite, but time is very much a finite resource. It's how we invest our time that makes the difference. We each have 1,440 minutes a day to figure out how we're going to invest, and we want to make sure that we're investing that time the way that the Lord would have us invest it. The verse comes to my mind when I looked at this, Ephesians 5, 15 through 17. It states, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. This verse always kind of, well, a part of it kind of confused me for a while. It was that, making most of every opportunity because the days are evil. I didn't quite understand what that meant. What does it mean that a day is evil? But as I looked at this and studied it a little bit further, I think what that's saying is that whenever we waste our time, or we don't have a purposeful use to invest our time, we're going to waste it away. We're going to end up having it go towards that which the world would have us go towards. The answer to that is stated there at the last part of the verse. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. And how do we know what the Lord's will is? We have to read and understand His Word. And as I've looked at the Scriptures, the summary that I come up with, what the Lord's will would be, is to love God, love others, and make disciples. So if we're going to maximize the use of our time, that asset that we have, we're going to invest it for one of those aims. And I'd like to bring up the fact of when we talk about investing time, I'll make the analogy of where we get the biggest return on our investment. So where we get return on financial capital or investments is usually within like your business, right? Or maybe a stock portfolio. You don't usually get it in cash. It's kind of you don't get a whole lot of return there. But in order to obtain those returns, sometimes it takes many years. It can take decades to actually realize the return that comes from your business or compound returns from a stock portfolio. And I'd make the same case for time as well. And see, in our culture, we have kind of an immediate gratification aspect where we hope to put something in and get an immediate result out of it. But taking this time and investing this time can maybe only pay dividends decades down the line. So it's really important that we make sure that we're investing it appropriately because we only have one shot to do this right. Some of the folks that we work with, we have an opportunity, whether it's business owners or even just individuals overall, we can run into situations where someone has amassed an enormous amount of financial capital. Maybe they have a large stock portfolio, a very successful business, but they have strained relationships with their kids, or they've missed out on ministry opportunities that God's provided along the way. And we see that as kind of tragic in many cases, because many times there could have been more sacrifice in investing of the time into your children or into ministry opportunities along the way, and then you wouldn't have all this financial capital that you're never going to need. They have more than they need, theoretically. And so in order to figure that out, as Clint alluded to before, we have to set a financial finish line or determine how much is enough. And we need to have a plan in order to figure out how we can make wise time investments along the way. So that when we get to 60 or 65, a lot of the world tells us that we need to retire at that age. Well, retirement's not necessarily a biblical concept, and I don't think it's anywhere in the Scriptures, as a matter of fact. Why not do something that you enjoy for a longer period of time, to 70 or 75? It doesn't mean that maybe God doesn't have you moving in a different path, but stretch your time horizon a little bit longer so that you don't have to feel like you work so hard to amass assets that you're just going to give away. And there's nothing wrong if God provides you with abundance, more than you would need. Certainly give that away, but don't just accumulate more so that you can give it away at the expense of the relationships around you.
Yeah, I love a statement. For those of you who are going to be here tonight, Russ Crossan, our CEO, will share. And he makes a statement that the reason that we try to be good stewards of our money is so that we can, money is really just a tool to buy time. And so you buy time so you can impact people, right? Because money's not eternal, people are. And so that's really the heart of what Mark is talking about. And really the flip side of that is the next thing that we can steward from a social capital perspective, and that's our relationships. And so what I want to do, quickly is just walk through a four-step process that we work with our clients that are business owners to help them maximize the stewardship opportunities in their relationships. And just real quick aside, this is, essentially captures all those slides and is over there on that table if you're interested in grabbing one on your way out. But the first step is really determining what impact God is calling you to make. Now, I realize that may seem, self-explanatory, but the reality is I work with businesses all over the country that do not do this. They haven't thought through, how does my business, what it does, they know what they do, but they don't necessarily tie it to why they do it. And so, you know, I think about Ephesians 2:10. You know, right after giving the gospel, Paul says, right, that we've been equipped for a good work that God has laid out for us to do. And as business owners, this includes your business. So, you know, God created your business for a purpose. Have you taken the time to figure out what it is? You know, if you haven't, I would strongly encourage you to spend some time either as individually or as with your leadership team to pray through that, right? It's a wonderful opportunity to invite the Holy Spirit into the long-term direction of your business. And again, Mark touched on the scripture, right? Is your business created? Did God give it to you so that you could help spread the gospel through it? Or did he give you your business so that you could help equip the church and make disciples? Or maybe he gave you your business so that you could help the poor and the hurting, providing mercy and justice. Whatever it is, whatever passions that God has put on your heart, whatever passions he's put in the leadership team, their hearts, is designed to come out in and through your business. So you've got to answer that what question. The second one is to determine where God's calling you to make a kingdom impact. Right? I think about Jesus' words in Acts 1 where he challenges his followers to be witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea and Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. Right? That's a strategy, that they have influence in those three different spheres. And so what is that for you and your business? We call that your kingdom positioning. And the reality is that your business has a kingdom positioning that no other business in the world has. God has placed you in a position that nobody else he's placed. And what I mean by that is, think about where your employees are located, right? Your employee relationships is something that you can be stewarding. Think about where your clients are located. Think about where your vendors are located. Nobody in the world shares the same employees, clients, and vendors that you have. So once you've identified where they are, start grouping them together, right? Your Jerusalem is probably going to be in and around your corporate headquarters, because that's where you're going to see most of your employees. That's maybe where you see a lot of your clients and your vendors. So that's your Jerusalem. Your Judea and your Samaria, depending on the size of your company, could be your state. It could be your region. You know, in Europe, it could be your country. And then, you know, your ends of the earth, again, depending on the size and scope of your business, if you've got clients all over the world, vendors all over the world, employees all over the world, then God's calling you to reach the world. And he's positioned you to do it in a unique way that nobody else had. He hadn't positioned anybody else. So determining where God is calling you to make a kingdom impact is critical. The next step is creating a plan to identify how you will steward your five talents. And again, from working with business owners around the country, I believe that every business owner has the same five talents they've been entrusted with. And that's their profits, their employee relationships, their client relationships, their vendor relationships, and their community influence. And so if we look at the end of the parable of the talents, when the master gives those talents and entrusts them to the servant, he's expecting a return. He doesn't just give it to him and say, hey, make the most of it, do whatever you want to, I hope you have a good time. He expects a return. And as business owners, he expects a return from you as well. And so do you have a plan to intentionally steward all five of the talents that God has given you? And then finally, the final step is to determine when you're going to put your plan into action. I mean, think about James's words. We've not been called just to be hearers of the word, but also to be doers. And so if you follow this process, you're going to have a unique stewardship plan for your business that fits you and you alone. So when are you going to put it into practice? I would encourage you that now is the time. And so, you know, again, if this is something that interests you, right, we call it a business generosity plan. You know, this information is over there, and we'd be happy to spend some time with you. We've worked with businesses all over the country and identified the best practices that they do in each of those five talents. And we're happy to share that information with you and see what resonates with you, what fits your company, and how you can put it into practice. You know, whether it takes a lot of money or a little money, a lot of time, a little bit of time, and then what areas does it resonate in? So again, we're happy to help you with that however we can. The next step in three-dimensional generosity is thinking about our spiritual capital, right? So just as being generous with our social capital built on our financial capital, right? We're not generous with social instead. It's additive. Being generous with our spiritual capital is something that we do additionally, on top of our financial and social capital. And we define spiritual capital as beginning to think about maximizing God's kingdom impact beyond just yourself, right? This is how do we prepare and equip the next generation, both inside our family and inside of our business. Think about this statement. I love this. Your children and your business are messages that you're sending to a time, place, and people that you will never know. What are they going to say? That's kingdom impact. That's generational kingdom impact. And the reality is we have an enormous opportunity in front of us. There is a demographic change that is coming in our country and around the world that is creating an unbelievable opportunity for spiritual generosity. And think about this. Within our lifetimes, an estimated $5 trillion will pass from baby boomer evangelical Christians to their children. $5 trillion. You could accomplish the Great Commission with that money in our generation. You could end material poverty with that money in our generation. Another one, you've seen this phrase, this quote is in your FCCI booklet, right? That one of the next great moves of God is going to be through the believers in the workplace. Billy Graham said that. And it's true, if you think about it, we live in a post-Christian society. The church is no longer the center of our culture. And so a lot of people don't go to church, but pretty much everybody still has to go to work. And so it is a fertile field to impact them with the gospel. But with every great opportunity, not only is there, if you think about opportunities in your business, not only do they present themselves in a limited amount of time, but there's also typically obstacles or challenges that we face to realize them. And the obstacle facing us in realizing these two opportunities are this. According to the American Faith and Culture Institute, only 4% of millennials espouse a biblical worldview. Now think about the impact that this has. So, at Royal Blue Trust, we do a lot of estate planning. And the majority of the states that we work on, from Christian, born-again, evangelical believers, they pass on their wealth to the next generation equally, regardless of what they believe. So if they've got two children, it goes 50-50, whether you believe or don't believe, or three children, a third. If that happens, and think about that $5 trillion, right? If this goes equally to children, whether they believe or they don't believe, then that means a large portion, potentially a large portion of the money that God blessed this generation with to accomplish and further his kingdom will not be used for kingdom purposes. That's a huge challenge. And then similarly, if you think about, I'm going the wrong direction. If you think about millennials, they're the ones that are going to be receiving our businesses as we go through business transition. And so are they ready to receive it? The Exit Planning Institute did a survey looking at the state of owner readiness for transition in 2016, and they shared two very disturbing statistics. The first one they shared is 63% of small businesses are owned by baby boomers. So that means that in the next 10 to 15 years, 63% of the small businesses in our country are going to transition. But again, is the next generation ready to receive them? Or have they prepared for that transition? Well, it also found that 88% of small businesses do not have a defined transition plan. 88% of business owners that plan through everything else in their business have not thought through, how do I continue the kingdom impact of my company? And if that's the case, then if that business is transitioned to a millennial that doesn't share their worldview, what's going to happen to the kingdom impact of that company? It could come to an end like that. And so then Billy Graham's statement, would that happen? In a large portion of businesses, it will no longer be the next great move of God because the people who received it didn't share the beliefs. And so there's a responsibility that we have in this process, right? And that's where investing and being generous with our spiritual capital comes in, because it's our responsibility to prepare and equip the next generation to receive this wealth, to receive these businesses. And let me share with you just some quick ways that we can do this. One, I think that the foundation is we've got to start thinking like God thinks. Okay, God thinks generationally. He doesn't just think in time, right? He's outside of time. And so he thinks generationally. Think about Deuteronomy 6, when he was talking to Moses as the nation of Israel was getting ready to go into the promised land. He challenged Moses to think generationally, to leave a legacy and make a lasting impact in how we teach our children, how we raise them up, how we integrate our faith into everything that we do so that it doesn't just affect us, but affects our children and our children's children and their children. God thinks generationally, and we've got to start thinking generationally. So a few ways that you can do that in your business. First one is develop your mission, your core values, and your vision. Now, I realize you've probably heard this a lot of different times, and I'm not going to talk to you about too much about this, but I can't stress enough that you can't overlook it. I'm doing succession plans for two different businesses around the country right now who the current generation, second generation family business, love the Lord with all their heart and have done the best to try to steward their kids, but they've built a business based on what they do. They can't answer why they do it. And so therefore, the kids who love the Lord aren't interested in staying in the business. They want to go out and do something that's changing the world. They want to go out and be a part of something that is impacting God's kingdom, and they don't see it happening in their business. One of them is a specialty machine parts company in Chicago, and they have 50 different nationalities operating inside of their business. You know, of employees that they serve. But the kids want to leave the company and go make a difference in Southeast Asia. And I'm just sitting there going, okay, am I the only one seeing this? And it's because they haven't really defined the mission of the organization. You know, it's to make great tools, right? To make great screws and nails to be used for, you know, in Ford or GM. Or I mean, that doesn't really get somebody engaged in why God created your business to begin with. Why did he bless you with it, right? That's what a mission statement truly does, is it helps you answer questions like, how do you contribute to a better world? Hopefully, your mission statement connects to Jesus's words in Mark 12, that you know, and the two greatest commandments, that we are called to love God and to love people. And so your values really just define how you integrate your faith into what you do. And it's how do you behave? And then ultimately your vision is this compelling future state that attracts the next generation. I mean, really, when you're doing this, you're creating an environment that attracts people, that makes them want to come and be a part of what you're doing. And you're casting that vision for them. So the second step is to think generationally in your business is to institute a continuity plan. This really gets to your leadership team, right? The people that are making the operational decisions every day. And this ultimately drives what we term operational continuity, right? We go back to what Mark said. If you want to be generous in and through your business, it's got to be healthy first and foremost. So how do you maintain that health and how do you maintain that kingdom impact? We say build a continuity plan. Identify the next generation of leaders in your company that can fulfill key roles and start pouring spiritual capital into them. Right? Start preparing and equipping them to take over that leadership role. Not only does it make your company stronger by building a broader and deeper leadership pool, but it also protects you in times of crisis. When there's an unexpected change in leadership, either because somebody resigns unexpectedly or somebody dies unexpectedly, and you've already got the talent in place to step in. It provides continuity for ongoing kingdom impact by thinking generationally. A good example of that is seen in Numbers 27. When God comes to Moses and says, you need to prepare Joshua, right? Before we go into the promised land, you need to prepare Joshua and you need to pour into him because he's going to take over and continue the work that I'm doing. Next one is build a transition plan. Now, you've heard a lot about succession today. I maintain that transition is different, okay? Just like a square is a rectangle, but a rectangle is not a square, or the other way around. Succession is a form of transition, but transition is so much more than just succession. Because let's be honest, you can have an internal transition plan where you succeed it to your next family member or to key leaders, or it could be an M&A where you're selling the business to somebody else who buys into and shares your kingdom impact and wants to continue your business because you don't have any heirs to take over the business. But at its core, a transition plan solves the problem that every last one of you in here who owns a business has. And that's that you can't run your business forever. Somebody's got to step in and take it over and provide strategic continuity, right? This is about the change of ownership. And really what a transition plan does is it answers questions like, who am I going to transition the business to? Family, leaders, strategic, you know, acquirers or financial buyers. It answers questions like, what am I going to transition? Am I going to transition the stock or the assets? Am I going to give them controlling interest or non-controlling interest, voting stock, non-voting stock? It answers questions like, when am I going to do it? Am I going to start to transition ownership while I'm still working, while I'm still the CEO? Or am I going to do it after I retire, but I'm still living? Or am I going to do it after I die, and I'm going to do it through my estate plan? Right, that transition plan clarifies those things, and even it helps figure out, you know, the structure of it. Do I need to get all cash so that I can fund the work that God is calling me to do? Am I going to provide seller debt to help the next generation buy in? Or am I going to use generosity and either give some of it to the National Christian Foundation in advance of a sale so more money goes to God's kingdom? Or am I going to be generous to my kids through the estate plan to help them buy into the business? But a transition plan communicates all of that and really gives you a framework to have extremely rich conversations with your children or with your key leaders, to pour spiritual capital into them and make sure that the kingdom impact of your business continues. So all three of these really work together inside of the business. Mark, you want to share some ideas on how they can do that personally?
Certainly. As I was looking, share with my wife what I was going to talk about, she shared this passage with me, which I thought was really applicable. It's Ecclesiastes 2:21, and that is, when there is a man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, then he gives his legacy to one who has not labored with them. This too is vanity and a great evil. Later on in Ecclesiastes, Solomon will write that wisdom with an inheritance is a good thing. So at the first part, he's talking about inheritance being of great evil. In the last part, he's talking about wisdom with an inheritance being a good thing. The key aspect there is the wisdom being passed down to the next generation. And so just like Clint was talking about for the business, we think that developing a process for transferring that wisdom down to the next generation is really important. Just like God has a mission for your business, He should have a mission for your family as well. So developing a family mission statement is one of those exercises that can really help your family see why is your family on this earth? What's the purpose of your time here? One thing that we provide for our clients, this isn't straight from the Bible, but we do believe it's been helpful in the lives of a lot of the clients we serve, is hosting a family conference. And a family conference is really an opportunity for the matriarch or patriarch of the family to share the vision that they have, share their story of how they acquired the wealth or the business, the lessons that they've learned along the way, spiritual lessons. It's an opportunity for them to really invest spiritual capital into the next generation, kids and grandkids. I look at it as a way for them to give glory to God about the successes in their business, but also be very transparent about the failures along the way. There's nothing more beneficial, I've found, than to be very transparent about my shortcomings with my children. It's not like they don't already know that they're there. But just like this conference, a family conference can be a fun event and a meaningful event, but it's not beneficial in the long run unless we make ongoing investments into the lives of our kids and our grandchildren. And so here's a few ideas of what that might look like. Again, if you have things that you've done, I'd love to hear them. But one thing is getting involved in the charitable interests that they have. Maybe you've given traditionally to your local church and they're really interested in a missions organization in Africa or the Middle East. Maybe it's good to go on a vision trip with them. Not only does that allow them to really explore and take spiritual leadership of the family, but it also allows you to build a bonding relationship with your kid through this trip. Another would be, we see clients that are passing on maybe a large amount of inheritance to a child. Let's say you're going to give $1 million to your child. Would it make sense to maybe give a gift of $5,000 or $10,000 early on and let them see how they're going to utilize those funds? They may make mistakes with it, but it's a lot better to make mistakes with $5,000 or $10,000 than it would be with $1 million. This is a simple thing that I've seen, is just transferring the baton of, if you have a family gathering at Christmas or Thanksgiving, you say a pre-dinner blessing, invite your son or daughter to say that. It allows them to step into that role of leading the family spiritually. And then lastly, invest into your children and grandchildren by perhaps even babysitting your grandkids to allow your kids to go out and have a date night or maybe get away. I'm actually personally benefiting from that now. My mother-in-law is taking care of our kids while my wife and I are down here. So it's important to have these ongoing investments so that we can have a meaningful impact and so that we can finish well. Okay, we see a number of folks in the scriptures who have a glimmer, they have a good spot, but so very few of them finish well. I challenge you to look at the scriptures and just see how very few finish well. And one of the things that is I look at would be, how do we define what finishing well would look like? In my mind, it's making little of yourself and making much of Christ through your family. I look at 2 Timothy 2:2 when I think of this. It says, "And the things you've heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable men who will be qualified to teach others." So it doesn't really talk a whole lot about financial succession plan, but here Paul is instructing Timothy to entrust this teaching to reliable men who will be qualified to teach others. Just within that short verse, he's talking about four generations of followers of Christ. That's what finishing well looks like to me. Whether that's through your business or through your family, it's not making so much of yourself and your own legacy, but making a legacy of Christ through your family and through your business. I think we may have a couple minutes here available for questions. If there's, sure.
Mark, was it Ecclesiastes 2:21?
Ecclesiastes 2:21. Yeah. And then it's Ecclesiastes 7:11, I want to say. 7, 11, and 12, that talks about wisdom with an inheritance there. So, we do have resources at the table here if you would like to pick some of those up. Clint talked about the business health, I talked about the business health assessment. There's a questionnaire over that you can pick up. We have the developing a business generosity plan. The resources are over at the table. But I'd like to open up for any questions that you might have. Gary?
This issue arises with me every year. Income versus cash flow. Mm-hmm. And it just seems, I don't know if anybody else has this problem, I get tremendous income, but the cash flow is far, far less than the income because of the many assets and businesses and stuff that I'm involved in. And so it's always complex in my mind to give on a percentage or give... Mm-hmm. In regards to income versus cash flow, do you ever get this question, and how do you answer it?
Yeah, we get the question all the time. I mean, there's a number of different aspects called phantom income.
Does anybody else have this problem?
Yes.
Russ is going to answer.
I could preach on this all day, but this is the classic problem that business owners have. But here's the real challenge. Eric put up those three points. The New Testament says, give as you've been prospered. So the challenge you all have is, how do you do that with a business and assets and other things? And you have to have a strategy to figure out how to extricate yourself from those non-liquid assets in a way that's going to please God. Because I don't think the answer when you stand before him is not going to be, well, I just gave it in my estate. And so my appeal to you all is, you not only have cash flow planning, but you have net worth planning. And this is the great challenge. But there's a lot of business owners that aren't engaging in the process of saying, okay, see, I struggle with the New Testament principle of give as you've been prospered. I wish it just said give 20% or 30% or whatever. It doesn't. It says give as you've been prospered. So for the business owner, like you just articulated, that's got assets and land and businesses are growing, and I know you're not taking out much cash, leaving cash in the business and all that, I don't think it's going to be a good answer. Well, God, I just didn't know quite what to do, so I just kept growing the business. And so I think what I've seen in 37 years is you engage in the process. It requires a plan. Our whole company started when Ron came back from Africa, saw the needs in Africa, the wealth in this country, and that's immediately what we started doing, was helping people figure out how to draw finish lines and give how they've been prospered. And that means sometimes you have to give some of that land or give a piece of the business and have your children, as they come in, buy from the foundation, not from you. There's all kinds of ways to do it, but I would just encourage you, it's a common question for business owners. It's what most of them do. They go back and they draw out their $100,000 or $200,000 salary, the business goes up $500,000 a year, and they just say somebody else can worry about it later. That's not a good answer. So I would just encourage you, engage in the process. There's ways to do it. We've been doing this, we've had 37 years of helping people actually give more, but it takes a plan. Because you look at it and you think, well, I don't have any cash. you know, but I got these assets, you know, how's that all work together? It does work together, and there's a way. And one of the first assets I had a guy give was a note receivable. He was a business owner in Michigan, moved to Phoenix. He didn't know he could give away his note receivable. He had a $178,000 note receivable. I said, well, let's just give that away. Then hadn't even crossed his mind. Avoided the capital gain tax, got a $178,000 deduction. So great question, common problem for all business owners. And I've become more convicted lately of the New Testament principle that you're to give as you've been prospered, and what the heck does that mean? And that what it means is, for business owners, you got to engage in it, because stand before the Lord and say, well, I just didn't know what to do, so I just let my business just keep growing. So, yeah, good question. Common
right here,
question.
Russ.
There are answers.
I'm kind of one of these guys too, CPA. I get asked the question a lot from wage earners and as well as business owners, do I tithe or give from my gross or from my net? I don't know if you guys get that a lot, but I, you know, get that. Do I give from my gross or my net? And, you know, one of the things I tactfully say lovingly, do you want God to bless your gross or your net? But, Russ.
That's really not even the right question. We all should be asking the question, how much should I keep? Because we don't own any of it, okay? And so, like Eric said, we don't even like the tithe idea, because for most people in that room and in this room and in this country, a tithe is a good place to start and a lousy place to stop, and it's not about the gross or the net. The issue is, how do I give as I've been prospered? And we want, God owns it all, so there really is, how much should I be keeping? And then I need to give away the rest. And let me just tell you a little sneaky thing here before we have to go up and hear the next speaker, but we live in a country right now that has a matching program for your giving. So one of the first questions you should ask yourself is, why am I not giving away 50% of my income? Because the government matches that. That's a good first place to start. Forget the tithe, gross, net, whatever. But most people can give way more than they think, because they're going to get back 30 or 40% of it, up to 50% of their AGI. So I would just encourage you to think about that. As you're making your decision this afternoon about what to give to FCCI, you might have been thinking about $10,000. Well, if you gave $20,000, you're really not giving $20,000, because you're going to get deduct that. So anyway, everybody asks that, and everybody says, well, you want to be blessed the grosser than that. I think the right question is, how much should I be keeping? So, sorry. You shouldn't have had me.
And I would add that even the amount that you're keeping, because it's all his, we need to be thinking about how we're using what we're keeping for kingdom purposes anyways. So if I'm using money to go grab coffee with someone that I'm discipling, I think that's a kingdom use of those funds just as well. Or, you know, what I'm keeping in my business, I want to make sure that, hey, it's all his anyways. So as I come to that conclusion, my entire life's going to be on the trajectory of having all my assets dedicated towards kingdom purposes.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that we wanted to encourage you with today, is it's not just about giving money. To Mark's point, anytime you're using money to build relationships, whether you're investing social capital by helping your employees be better husbands and wives, or whether you're investing spiritual capital by discipling somebody else or volunteering in a ministry, that's generosity. Right, that's part of our journey of generosity. And to Russ's point, you know, it doesn't start with the tithe. It also doesn't just start with financial giving. It's giving with, you know, everything that God has blessed us with, our time, our talents, and our treasures. Ron?
I struggle a little bit sometimes with your phraseology, because in playing off the idea you're keeping, or what do we keep? Right. It's all God's. So what is this whole thing? Well, you're going to do this here so you can give to ministry. It's all ministry. So you're creating separation, and by carrying separation, if you feel you're not giving to some ministry, you put out a feeling you're guilty, you're not serving God well.
Right.
And I'm really struggling with that, because it's all his. Everything I do every day is ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So how I give it out, it may not be to a 501c. It may be the way I treat my employees. It may be paying for their school books, right, or something like that. So. I mean, how do you deal, from an education, because I think this separation here issue creates a lot of guilt and a lot of anger and a lot of frustration, because business owners feel, well, I'm Christian, I should be given to all these ministries that come up to my church and everything, and if you're not, you're feeling like you're a failure.
Right. Well, I think, too, that, I mean, were you in the previous session when Eric talked about spending joyfully?
Right.
I mean, there's an aspect of spending joyfully that is God-honoring, right? I mean, Ecclesiastes tells us that you enjoy the fruits of our labor. So there are aspects of that. And then when we do that, it's going to have a kingdom purpose, just like he talked about. But he also said that those that are on that generous lifestyle path, a lot of times they don't even think about how much they're giving, because they've already understood that God owns it all. And so everything they're doing, and yeah, some of that's going to go to a ministry. Some of that's going to go to provide experiences for your children, or, you know, groceries, whatever it may be. But every decision that we have is a spiritual, a spending decision we have is a spiritual decision, because it's God's money ultimately.
Yeah, and Ron, I'd take you back to what we talked about with the parable of the talents, right? The five talents that every business owner has. Profits was just one piece of it. And there is an aspect of God has blessed your business with material, you know, profits so that you can give in the areas that God has put passion in your heart. But 80% of those talents were more relationships through the daily operation of your business, and thinking about how, you know, chaplaincy. How do I love on and care for my employees? You know, an easy way to be generous to your vendors: payment of advance. If you've got 30-day payment terms, pay them in 25. Be a blessing to them, right? You think about Jesus' words, you know, in the Sermon on the Mount, or the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew 5, right? That we're not just supposed to go 1 mile, go two. We're not just supposed to give them our, you know, our coat. We're supposed to give them our cloak as well. And so as a business owner, you can think through your operation to be generous with all of it, in the way you interact with your vendors, or the way you interact with your clients, and engaging them in, if God's calling you to help the poor and the hurting around the world, engage your vendors and your clients in that process. Build those relationships and help them see how they can contribute to furthering God's kingdom, whether they believe in him or not. But I agree with her wholeheartedly. It's got to be completely integrated. It's not faith and work. It's work as worship. I want to be sensitive to time. So Mark and I will be around, you know, the rest of the day. And then Russ is talking tonight, so we'll be around for that as well. And be happy to talk through anything. And again, the business generosity plan can help you walk through some of this and think through your business from, you know, in all of its totality. But thank you so much for your time today.